This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
Alrighty, welcome to another edition here of Reinvention Radio. Steve Ulscher hanging out with Richie Ote. What's up, Richie?
Hey, how's it going?
All right. Mary Goulet is out doing her thing in New York City. YY's holding it down in the studio. Kelly's got it back home, and we're joined in the studio by the one and only Senor Brady Casanzo. What's up, Senor Brady Casanzo? How are you, man? Good to see you, brother.
I feel like I should talk in an accent.
No, we're in San Diego. You know, we're just, the wall hasn't gone up yet, so I think we're still good on that. But yeah, man, so lots going on in the world and lots to talk about. Wait, we're getting kind of a little bumpy bump here on the sound, just so you know. I don't know if there's an open mic or something like that, but just so you know. But we will fight through. We will continue to press forward. There we go. Much better. Thank you for that. All good, all good. For those who are joining us for the very first time here, tuning into Reinvention Radio, welcome. We really do appreciate you. And if you've been subscribing to the podcast edition and rating and reviewing it, big hugs and big thanks to you on that. So thank you so much for the love. And came off of a really, really big month in August as far as listenership goes. And the Reinvention Radio revolution continues.
Yes.
And continues to roll on. So we appreciate you being a part of the revolution here. And speaking of revolution, speaking of reinvention, I got to tell you, man, we're kind of looking at the poster child right here, right now, live with us here in studio, Brad Costanzo. I mean, there are some folks who know you from Bacon Wrapped Business, the podcast, which is a good quality, fun show. How long have you been doing that show, by the way? And are you still doing it on a consistent basis, or are you on hiatus now? Because I know podcast stuff is kind of wonky that way. We kind of come and go with it a little bit, but where are you at with the show right now?
Been doing it for 3 years. I started it in June of 3 years ago, whatever that is, 2014.
14, yeah.
Exactly. I'm not good at the maths. And yes, I actually just I just got done recording an episode right before this, and then I hauled butt over to the studio.
Sweet.
And thanks for having me, by the way. But yeah, I've been doing it. I will say that I do sometimes commit the cardinal sin of podcasting, which is lacking consistency all the time. I don't have a live radio show like you guys do.
Yeah.
It helps keeps you consistent.
Right, because sometimes I'm thinking, you know, these listeners are not paying me directly for this. I'm going to take a week off.
So don't complain if I don't give you new content. Is that what you're saying, Brad?
I will say this. I have multiple times on my show, I've referred to it as the most selfish show on iTunes because literally only have guests that I have authentic curiosity that I really want to pick their brain.
Yeah.
And I want to build a relationship with them. And I'm probably one of the only, if not the only, podcast host who thinks of my audience like third. I think of myself. I think of the guest. I think of my podcast audience. I'm like, you guys are flies.
At least you're honest.
Yeah, right.
However, I've also been told that from some of my listeners, they're like, but that actually makes it a good show because I know that you're into the guest.
Yeah.
Because I actually have asked. I'm not just asking just routine questions. I'm asking questions that I'm taking notes because I'm going to use what I'm learning in my business, my client's business, or somewhere else.
Yeah,
part of what I love about, because I listen to your show too.
Thanks.
And one of the things I love about it is that you notice things that most podcasters that just have their notes in a row with their questions they're going to ask, and then something will fly out that's in passing in conversation. The people that just go off the questions they've written almost never catch those. And as a listener, you're going, wait, he just said something super interesting, you know, and you catch them.
Yeah, I've never written more than probably two questions for a guest because it might just be
You see how many I got for
Steve's
you right
got
now?
A blank,
blank piece of paper.
Right,
yeah. This is for notes that so I do it more organically as the interview goes on. As things trigger, I write it on the piece of paper, not the other way around. But look, man, you've got a pretty let's just call it a storied career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you've won, you've lost, you've won. And look at you now, man. I mean, you're still losing. But no, I'm just playing. No, it's all good. But it's better than it was, right?
Exactly.
I mean, like things come, they go. And
absolutely.
So for those who don't know your story, kind of take us back a little bit because you're, I mean, really, you're the personification, man, of perseverance and someone who has reinvented their life. And you've had a number of iterations. What version of Brad are we on now?
Yeah, I don't know.
4.0, 8.0, or whatever it might be.
You know, years ago... years ago, when I was maybe 23 years old.
That's a long time ago, dude.
I was about 20 years ago. So, about 20 years ago, almost exactly, a friend of the family told me, because I was like confused as hell, didn't know what I was doing. I was making just different choices, had reinvented myself at that point. And he's like, look, live your life like you're writing a book about it. At the end of your life, you want to, you know, you want other people to read the book and be interested. You want to open the book and not fall asleep. But the one thing that all books have in common is that every it's filled with different chapters, ups and downs, drama, action, sadness, love, loss, and everything. And when you're done with one chapter, write a new chapter. Mm-hmm. And I kind of kept that in the back of my mind. So it's allowed me to overcome some of the necessary reinventions I've had to do with just like, all right, new chapter. Like that chapter's been written. What's next? Put
some context around that. So when you say you've had to rewrite it, you've had to start over, and obviously I'm saying you've lost, you've won, so on. So give folks a little bit of an understanding of what does that look like.
Yeah, and I'll preface it with this because this is really interesting that me talking about this. I've always had I had a pretty charmed childhood. Parents love me. God forbid, right?
Parents love you. You're a good-looking kid. You were probably one of those athletes. Did decent, right? I mean, the whole
wasn't
nine.
Wasn't a great athlete.
Did you peak in high school? Be honest.
No, I didn't. I peaked way after high school. I'm still waiting for my peak, damn it. But what I'll say is I'd probably be much more successful if I had a really traumatic childhood, have something just, shoving me.
You get more speaking gigs.
Right, that's true. No, so I've actually said I sometimes have trauma envy. Of people like, I would be much more interesting if I was like living on my sister's couch and, doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
But I was like, I've never had anything that terrible happen to me. And I was actually talking to one of my friends and mentors, Sean Stevenson, about this, about, how to build my story.
Are we talking the athlete, Sean, or are we talking the wheelchair, Sean?
Wheelchair, three-foot Sean. Sean.
Yes.
And
I just want to make sure I know what we're talking about here.
I love
a big
it too.
Difference.
It's funny.
Two Sean Stevens.
You can tell it's your friend when you're like, oh, no, I'm 3 foot giant.
Yeah. But he does go by 3 foot giant. But anyway, and I've actually got one of my podcasts where I interviewed him on. He did this live with me, and it was great because I was telling him, like, I have a hard time telling my story because I just don't feel it's as super relatable because I didn't. Have this traumatic thing that I just like such drum that would make a good TV show. Mm-hmm. And he started to ask me, what are some of the things you've gone through that you just wouldn't wish anybody to? And I started to relive it.
Did you cry?
No, I didn't. But I started to relive how, I thought I knew what I was going to do all through college. And then right after college, I switched it up because I went through this existential crisis and I did something completely different, which was I thought I was going to be like on Wall Street and finance and all this stuff. And then I got a job working minimum wage at Disney World immediately after for a couple years. My dad basically stopped talking to me for 2 years, literally. And we had a great relationship before and it was just like, I disown you. You are working at a carnival with.
So once you put on the goofy costume, like the real relationship between you and your parents comes out. So
right.
Yeah.
So I marked that down. I'm like, I had a really rough patch with my dad. And then I got into financial advising again. I kind of got back into that. And I had about $100,000 saved up from money I didn't spend in college.
I didn't know the Disney suits paid that well. I mean, that's a good thing, dude.
But, back in 99, 2000, I started investing everything I had on margin as a financial advisor.
Are we talking like puts and calls?
No, just borrowing money to buy stocks. Cisco,
Nice. Were you telling your clients that too?
No. But I was like, they're basically giving me money to invest. And you threw a dart at the wall and you made a fortune. And then 2000 came around and I lost everything I had, which at the time, and I was about 26, 7 years old, at the time it was like, $120,000. I went down to like zero, like negative $15,000 in the bank account. Yeah. And then I was telling him the story about how, and then I made that all back in real estate investing. And
so can we stop though for the bridge there? You and I share a lot of similarities insofar as that is concerned. But part of what I want to help people understand is, how do you actually reinvent when you're 15 in the hole, when you've just lost 120? And I did the same thing. I mean, I was in the .com world, and we had just tried to take liquor.com public, and that was March of 2000 when the S-1 filed. And, of course, that was the beginning of the end. Never got out. And I then got into real estate. I've shared my story before in terms of how I did that. But if you're 15 in the hole, how do you start over and how do you get into real estate investment? Like, how did that happen, though? Can you bridge that gap for folks?
Absolutely. And I'll bridge that because I just want to tie up this one loose end with where I was going with telling these stories, because I was telling Sean these. And he goes, well, first of all, Brad, you know, with my trauma envy, like I'm not that interesting. He goes, what do you think people can relate to more? The fact that, you know, I've broken 100 bones in my body and that I'm 3 feet tall and in a wheelchair? Or do you think that people can relate, you know, to people who've just been living in the gutter, et cetera, or that they've lost everything they've had, their parents didn't approve of a choice they've made, mm-hmm. they've gone through emotional turmoil? He goes, you've lived some of the stuff that most people have in common. Like, you've been up, you've been down. It hasn't necessarily – most people haven't led dramatically traumatic lives.
Yeah.
But he goes, but somehow you discount the fact that it was traumatic, even though a lot of people would have been completely traumatized by losing everything. But he says, but you somehow bridged the gap and you didn't let it define you as a loser or as a failure, and you just moved on and made it again. So hopefully that kind of segues back to that bridge. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it just had to do with my – that attitude of next chapter. Yeah. I learned that early, next chapter. So when I lost all the money in the stock market, I mean, I was devastated.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was devastated. But I realized, okay, I can either try to make this back with a job, or I can try to learn what another way to make the money. Mm-hmm. And I Googled how to invest in real estate.
All right, let's stop you there. So we're going to take a quick break here on Reinvention Radio, because I know that there are a lot of folks who would love to do what you did, which is to basically, you know, pick themselves up by the bootstraps and just figure out how to get into a new career that is more lucrative or fulfilling, or hopefully both, right? And so I want to talk about how you were able to do that. And then, of course, you're going to be joining us at the New Media Summit. And I want to have a chance to talk about, you know, why you said yes to that. And we got a lot to cover here with Brad Costanzo of Bacon Wrap Business here on Reinvention Radio. And, of course, a lot of other things as well. And we'll talk about those, too. All right, more with Brad and Richie O'Jay. I'm Steve Ulsher, right after this.
Attention coaches, authors, speakers, and business owners. Please pay close attention to what I'm about to say if you want to secure massive visibility fast and generate thousands of highly qualified leads without spending a dime on advertising or marketing. The easiest way to make this happen is to appear as a guest on the world's most popular podcast. We recently came across an awesome resource that provides detailed contact information for 240 new media influencers who are looking for guests just like you. It's called the Ultimate Directory, and for a limited time, you can get the preview edition of the directory absolutely free. That's right, for free. It's time for you to get the visibility you and your business deserve and connect with the world's leading icons of influence who can make you famous with the push of a button. Get your free preview edition of the Ultimate Directory right now at www.myultimatedirectory.com. That's myultimatedirectory.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulsher.
Alrighty, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. Steve Ulsher hanging out with Richie O'Tay. What's up, Richie?
What's going on?
Wait, Wazel's going down to the studio. Mary Poker. Kelly Poker's got it holding down back home. And Mary Goulet is in New York City hanging out with Davey, I think. I think her and Davey got a little vacay going. So good on her, and Mary will be back next week. And we got the one and only Brad Costanzo hanging out here in studio with us. So, Brad, I just want to make sure that there's a lot of ground that we want to cover here, but I want to make sure that we close the loop on what we started talking about, which is you found yourself in the hole and literally owing more money than you had to your name. You had just blown through that's a lot of money.
When it's everything you have, it doesn't matter if it's $100 or a million. If it's everything you have, you're back to square one.
It's relative. I mean, and look, you know, with a lot of stuff in the internet marketing world, obviously you're very familiar with the IM world and whatnot. I mean, when people are doing $2 million launches over the course of 14 days, it's like, what's $120,000 or whatever? But it's a lot of money, you know, no matter how you slice it. So my question to you then is, how did you actually recover? Like, how did you get back to zero in terms of debt, and then in terms of being able to actually make money and have money in the bank? How did you do that?
Well, wait.
Yes, Richie.
He started with the cliffhanger of, so I Googled how to make money in real
estate. True, yes.
Well, and that's what it is.
Thank you.
So there's two parts to it. There is the most important part, which is the mindset, and then there's the tactical stuff. And I'll touch on the mindset, which is, as I said, it's a new chapter. Don't dwell on the past. try not – as much as it hurt, I tried not to define myself by the stupidity of the crap that I did and just said, well, I can wallow in it or I can just move forward and I can figure this out another way. I've always been more entrepreneurial and just try to figure it out as opposed to just try to get a job
but
and
can
save
we stop
more.
There for 1 second? How do you do that? Because there are people who have made mistakes that they just cannot get past.
You know, I
is
don't
it
know
just
if
in your DNA to be able to move it through?
I think so. I mean, it's
– do you listen to tapes? Did you –
I've always listened to personal development in a lot of ways, but I think I just said – I've only got two choices. I can wallow or I can move forward. So mm-hmm. let's just move forward. Like I just chose. And mm-hmm. I think most people, either they wallow or they hem and haw and like, I don't know. And it's that stuck in the middle stuff. You're at the fork in the road and you stay at the fork, you're going to be miserable.
Yeah.
Take a path.
It is that stuck in the middle, right? Because some people, pleasure can pull them. That's not really as much me because I like things, but I'm also – you know, I can stop and enjoy a sunset and get things out of simple enjoyments in life. Oh, I'm hanging with my daughter or what? You know, like so simply that pleasure isn't always the thing because I don't always need more. But I tend to – pain motivates me a little more.
Me too.
And I don't remember who said it, but I heard it the other day that it doesn't have to be one or the other. And it was kind of like, well, if you're in that scenario, let the pain motivate you until the pleasure pulls you. So maybe it's just enough to get past that 15,
I
get
agree
to
with
like
that
10.
1,000%. And the pain was, I don't ever want that to happen again. So I'm going to – now when I Googled how to invest in real estate, this was like 2003 and everybody else was starting to make some money in there. And I was like, well, if they can, I can.
Yeah.
Google might have this answer. And I bought the first product, which was the number one result on Google. I bought it and I got about a third, maybe a halfway through the home study course, just to know what foreclosure meant and what it meant, like what wholesaling or rehabbing was. I did not get through it. And I overheard somebody that I worked with at the time at Prudential Securities talking about their father-in-law's neighbor had blah, 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 foreclosure. And my ears perked up. And I walked over to her cubicle and I said, what's up? And she told me, I was like, well, put me on the phone with him. And I had no – like I was as uncomfortable as it could be. She goes, well, he's 85. I go, okay. He's in Switzerland or Sweden or Germany, somewhere over there. I think Switzerland. I go, okay.
Yeah.
And he barely speaks English. Okay. And he has he's somewhat senile. I was like, screw it. Put me on the phone. Here's his number. Now, I called it on my cell phone in 2003.
Yeah, you got billed for that.
Oh man! So and I didn't. I got
it's
on the phone.
Now he's 16,000 in debt.
Right.
So this is the other part of the mindset. It's important. Just jump in and just figure it. Get your foot in the door and figure it out as you go along. Mm-hmm. So he told me the address. You know, he told me his name and address, et cetera. And then I went and looked him up at the courthouse because I wasn't able to do it online. And I found out he owned four houses.
Mm.
And I was like, I'll buy him.
Yeah.
I ended up buying three. I had no idea what the heck I was doing. I called my dad. I was like, Dad, I got offers on three houses. Like. To rehab. And he's like, what? Like,
wait,
you never bought your own house.
I thought you were still in the goofy costume. Wait, do we move on to something else? No, but you can't just buy a house. Like, how did you
I literally, it's like, I got these houses. Now, skipping ahead the details, I got them for really good prices. Like, I got them probably for about 50% of what they would be worth fixed up. So the guy agreed to get rid of them.
So were you just like, did you just acquire the contract and then went and got it? Or did you actually have money saved?
No, I was like 15 in the hole. But now, I did have my – I got dad. If I knew then what I knew now, I just wholesaled them and made a quick like 30 grand. I said, Dad, I need to get three traditional real estate loans for these. Can I borrow $30,000, $10,000 for each? I'll pay you interest. And I got three conventional loans. I closed the day after Thanksgiving. It was a Friday. Mm-hmm. Title company hated me. And I had no idea what I was doing. I go, okay, great. I got these houses. I'm not handy at all. Dad, will you come down here and help me rehab these? So he did. It was a father-son rehab. I mean, this was as figured out as you go as it can be.
He's just happy you're not in Goofy's costume.
Yeah.
So over the course of that year, I made $120,000. I paid my dad back $30,000 plus little interest and very little interest. Thanks, Dad.
$3,300
yeah.
done. Yeah.
Yeah. And now I made all that money back several years after I lost it. And the next thing I did, maybe a year later, is I worked in the same building as an oil and gas company. And they were talking about the benefits of investing in natural gas wells.
Mm.
I called my dad. Hey, Dad, I was thinking about doing this. His advice was walk, don't run.
Right.
So of course I invested in it. The entire $90,000 that I had made, and within a year, poof, it was gone. So now I'm an idiot. I've done this twice. And the big lesson I learned was invest in yourself, not in – don't invest in other people hoping they're going to make you the money. Yeah. Invest in your own skill sets. So I read the 4-hour work week. At the same time, I got laid off from my job. Mm. And I – moving away from pain, I never wanted to schlep around and ask somebody for a job and to approve me as worthy of a paycheck.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to figure out this internet marketing crap. So I created an online course, and I use it as a marketing laboratory to just figure it out. It took me a little while to make some money, but it worked, and I sold that in like 2011 or 12. I sold that to an investor group, and I've been consulting ever since. And I mean, this is just like this is the journey about just,
yeah,
as I said, foot in the door, figure it out as you go. Don't dwell on the past, and just
borrow
and steal if you can.
And so today you're actually, as opposed to trying now to build your own businesses from scratch, you're actually now shifting into acquiring businesses.
Okay,
what does that look like? Like, how do you, and can anybody buy a business if they don't have money, though, to do? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so obviously if you have money, it's a little easier, but you absolutely do not have to. So the epiphany there that I had, which was, so I started stuff up, and I realized how fun starting something up is, and I also realized how much work it is. And I realize how high the failure rate is. You don't have a validated product. You don't have traction. You get the high off of the startup mode and getting everything figured out. And I've done this several times where then, like, now I got to operate this thing and it's not making any money. I was like, hey, I started up, but it's like you gave birth to the baby. You got to raise it. I would much rather adopt a teenager or a 25-year-old, actually.
Yeah, right.
So I had the epiphany that, okay,
with money
I know
in the bank, college degree done. Yeah,
yes.
Good idea.
I know how to market a business. I know the basic financials. I know how to do all the operations. I know this at certain levels. So why not find a company that is already proven, got traction, but it just isn't doing everything they're supposed to be doing in order to maximize it?
Mm-hmm.
And I was just looking at them as potential consulting clients. Like, yeah, let me just consult with you and make, you know, a fee, which I still do. But then I said, well, the magic question, have you ever thought about, selling this business or what you would do with you to exit? Would you ever get out? And like, yeah, I just don't know how. Well, I've made a couple offers. It says, well, the first one I made was, doing about $4 million a year. How about this? What are you making every month? I'll pay you that. I'll pay you X. This deal is not yet done, so I can't give the exact numbers.
Yeah.
But I can say I'll pay you X millions of dollars over the course of, let's say 3 years, and I'll just finance it. I'll just pay you exactly what you're making now plus a little bit more so that your daily income does not change, and I'll take over everything. And if I stop paying you, you get the money of the company back. And he said, sounds good.
Mm.
Now, it's changed. I may have to bring like 10% down, but that's going to be easy. And if I could write a check for it, but I may just raise the money. Because why not use other people's money?
Mm-hmm.
And it just – a big epiphany that I had, and this was from a former guest on my show, which was, look, as consumers, when we want shelter, we don't go to Home Depot and buy 2x4s and build a house.
Mm-hmm.
We go to the bank. We get a loan and we buy shelter.
Mm-hmm.
When we want a car, we do the same thing. We usually finance it and we buy a car that's already been put together. Why is it that we all think that as entrepreneurs, we have to build our cash flow – our income from the ground floor? Why don't we go buy it and finance it?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get that little thought meme out of my head. And I was just like, God, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
So I'm reinventing myself as mergers and acquisitions.
The M&A guy now, right?
Yeah,
that'll
exactly.
That'll be the next show.
Absolutely.
That you do. All right. So we're going to have to take another break here, but you're going to be joining us at the New Media Summit.
Yes.
Yeah. So that'll be awesome, man. And so you will be there. Why did you say yes? Just out of curiosity, other than
I have a personal relationship.
You had nothing better to do. Okay. But for people who have an opportunity to meet you at the New Media Summit, what do you tell them in terms of they're going to come up to you, they're going to pitch you, they're going to try to get onto your show? What kind of advice do you have for them?
Flattery will get you everything.
Flattery, right? Yeah, that'll do it.
I basically just say, ideally, they've kind of listened to one of the shows or they know about it. They're not like, hey, who are you? Can I be on your show?
Mm-hmm.
And understand a little bit about, what real value they can bring to me and the listener. And that's really ultimately what it is.
Yeah.
And if I think they don't bring any value, I'll say no.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Very cool. So Brad, you will be there along with the team from Reinvention Radio and of course, Richie and Mary and 36 other podcasters will be there. So you'll have a chance to meet us, pitch us on who you are and what you do and leave the event with bookings in hand. And we do still have a handful of tickets available at newmediasummit.net. So make sure you check things out there. More with Brad Costanzo of Bacon Wrap Business and the M&A Guy. More after this. Thanks.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. Steve Ulcher hanging out with Richie O'Shea. What's up, Richie?
What's up?
And I got Brad Costanzo here in the studio with us. Yeah, man. All right, so just so we have a general idea of what we're talking about here. I mean, are we talking about, like, are these retail businesses? Are these internet businesses? Are these physical product businesses? Like, what?
Right now, internet and physical product. Because that's my sweet spot. That's what I really understand. Mm-hmm. And the ideal acquisition target for me is somebody who's built up the company. Like, actually, the one that I'm working on, the big one that I'm working on right now, he's done $3 to $4 million a year in sales, all off the back of magazine ads to like an e-com site, and zero to no Facebook advertising, no email marketing. Mm-hmm. Just he's done what he can do, and I see that there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that I can come in and add a lot of value to it, yeah. And he can have an exit and have some more security and stop running all the BS.
So, I mean, look. Clearly, you've got this nice runway ahead of you. You're moving into work that inspires you, and finding these deals, I would think, is probably – I know when I was doing real estate development, and maybe you kind of felt the same way. It's like that hunt is what fires a lot of people up, is just finding that thing, and then it's like, you know, chasing the girls, and you get the date, and now it's like, okay. But is,
100%
so,
true.
So is that part of what you figured out that really – puts fire in your soul is that hunt? And is there, I mean, I would think there might even be value in that hunt of finding opportunities and being able to commoditize that somehow.
Yeah. So I love the hunt. I love hunting elephants. I love deal making and just figuring it, you know, just putting together a complex puzzle that, which in an acquisition is a complex puzzle, mm-hmm. but that's absolutely the thrill. And I'm always looking to hit home runs. We were talking, you know, during the commercial break about in the past, you know, if I'm pitching to somebody else hoping they're going to hit my home run, I always strike out. But if I'm swinging the bat myself and I'm trying to figure it out, I'm always trying to hit that homer. And this is the home run I want to hit is mm-hmm. I want to get control and ownership of a business that's already doing millions of dollars, and I want to make it doing tens of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. That for me, that's the home that kind of excites me. It excites the possibilities for me. But it's I mean, it's an adrenaline sport for me.
Do you do you feel like most folks in the entrepreneurial landscape play too small?
I don't know, because I've seen a lot of people try to play big and they've gotten really burnt. And I think it's both. Honestly, I mean, I think some people do play too small, but playing small, if you can play small and safe, you can get a lot of walks, you know, to use that baseball analogy, you're on base.
Right.
And so I don't want to be like everybody else and, think big, because sometimes you go hunting elephants, you get gored by, you know, a tusk.
Sure.
So I think I'm lucky. I've got a wonderful supporting wife and no children, and I can afford to play big and take mm-hmm. bigger risks. If I had like six kids,
you might play a different game.
Yeah, I might play a different game. So to each their own on that.
Yeah. Well, so go ahead, Richie.
I was just going to say, at different levels of business, there's different levels of commitment too. I stick with the sports analogies. Kind of always think of it's easy to start a business. It's even easy to have a business for a long time. But it can be really hard to grow one.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like you need to break things and fix things and make new things as you're breaking old things.
Yeah.
And so the analogy I use is you start out as golf. You pretty much are what you do is the only thing. You as your business grows, now you're like a basketball team. You know, if the forward falls, the center comes and covers him. You wear different hats. But by the time you get to those big dog corporations, you're like football. You know, defense is over there, offense is over there. Everyone thinks compartmentalized. And that's the hardest part is the systems and the procedures that you put in place at each level of that. Mm-hmm. You're so bought into it at the time, you forget. You got to keep breaking it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, it's interesting, something you kind of said there, like, I want to hit home runs and do these big deals, but I'm also very much a lifestyle entrepreneur. I want to do them big enough to get me what I need with mm-hmm. as much leverage, and that's really the key for me, as possible. But I don't want a 1,000-person company. I don't want a 150-person company or whatever. Yeah. I want to do highly leveraged deals that provide me the passion, but the income and the assets mm-hmm. that I have to where I don't have to worry about this. And so I want to hit big runs, but not at the expense of my life.
So at this point, I mean, obviously it's a balance,
yep.
right? That you're trying to find and spend time with the wife, spend time with the friends, have the lifestyle, but still have obviously enough income being generated. So are you what? I mean, there's a part of me that sits back and goes, I mean, I can definitely see how acquiring a business might be a good path to achieving all of those objectives. But at the same token, how do you assure yourself that the acquisition is a good one? In other words, like, until you're actually in the business.
I think that's how you assure yourself. There is no insurance, right? How do you? But at the same time, with your startup, how do you assure yourself that it's going to work?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You don't know. So you get in it. And now ideally, and this is the plan with these businesses, is that they are already generating income and profits. And I'm not catching a falling knife, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the due diligence that I've done, it's got to have enough money built in to where I can pay somebody to come in and take over 80% of the operations that I don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I don't want to do it. Like, if I've got to be the owner operator of these businesses, it's no go for me. So that's kind of the way that I assure myself. And then the other thing is I try to mitigate risk as much as possible. If I can owner finance the business, if I can mm-hmm. do something else.
One thing I'd add to that, which you probably already know, but just in case, because I've done similar things with these e-commerce ones. If you have, since you're paying out of potential future profits and you want to do it that way, having the owner stay on board for like 3 months.
Oh.
You're paying them to stay on for like 3 to 6 months. You're going through procedures, SOPs, which you probably do in that.
This big one. So I'm absolutely doing that with the one I just bought. And the big one that I'm buying, I'm not buying 100%. I'm buying 80% because I'm able to get it for a better price because he knows that I have the ability to hopefully 5X the revenues and mm-hmm. profits on this. And I'm letting him go along for the ride. And now he's got a vested interest in staying on. So, yeah, it's exactly like what you just said.
Yeah. So at this point, man, obviously you've had a lot of success. You've, as we've discussed, had some of the failures. You're back in the game. I like this model. I mean, there's a lot to be said. There's a lot to admire about going into this world of trying to find existing businesses. And you, of course, don't want to just acquire something to get yourself a job, right? I mean, that you don't want to replace the owner with yourself and mm-hmm. step into that position. So obviously there are different parameters that you have that you look at in terms of what makes sense and what doesn't. But what's that battle, man, that you're fighting right now that people don't know about? What's scaring you right now? I mean, what's going on in the real world of Brad?
So as far as that goes, it's exactly like I just took over ownership of one on Friday, and now it's like drinking from the fire hose because I can't hire somebody to run it unless I know, you know, what it looks like.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure that all out. So it's overwhelming, and I start to get really anxious. Like, oh crap, did I just do something stupid?
Yeah.
Right. And
is it based here in San Diego?
It's
e-commerce.
The first one
is
digital. Yeah. So it's just based on the webs, but it is now.
Yeah.
But the it was actually up in LA. But the the thing I struggle with most often in my life, I think, is. Number one is, did I bite off more than I can chew? Because mm-hmm. I oftentimes will do that. And then it's mm-hmm. like, oh, damn, I'm in the game. Like, I'm going to put my in the door. Am I going to get kicked out? And then also, do I have what I constantly have that imposter syndrome,
sure.
which is you know, I'm not as good as people as I think I am. I'm not as good as other people think I am, and that I'm actually just faking it all till I make it. And I feel like that. I think a lot of people suffer through imposter syndrome.
For sure.
And how did I get – like I shouldn't be here. I'm going to drop this ball.
Mm-hmm.
Like I always feel as though I'm going to drop the ball, and that's what makes me the most anxious and nervous. But it also keeps me on my toes because I'm like, I don't want to drop the ball, so I'm going to hold on to this thing pretty tightly. But I think it's really trying to – yeah, what keeps me up at night is just, am I on the right path? And I always think a lot about opportunity cost. Like, I'm doing this path, but I always beat myself up going, could I be doing a much simpler, more lucrative business model over here? And
yeah.
Then you got to fight the shiny object syndrome because it's very easy to get enticed to, hey, look what I've got over here. It's a lot of money, no work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I almost want to invent a t-shirt where, you know, how the grass is greener on the other side, where literally it shows, like, as you're jumping, the other side's turning green. Yeah. You know, it's like you just want to jump back where you were. How many people had jobs that go on to do entrepreneurialism, and then if they don't set it up right, they're like, damn, I wish I had my job back.
One thing I'll just – I want to emphasize is I do not have it all figured out. 90% of the time I feel like a total newbie out of my league. And I have a couple of coaching clients that I just kind of help one-on-one and get their mindset right about the business stuff. But anytime somebody starts something new, they're like, oh, I feel like I'll never figure this stuff out. Like, if I could just have a few years of experience, I'll finally feel comfortable in what I'm doing. I was like, I've never felt like I've got it all figured out. I always feel as though I'm an idiot.
And that's why we love you, man, because, you know, it's and that's what makes your show as good as it is, because you're just you. And that's why, you know,
picking their brains, like, that's I feel like an idiot. So I invite smart people on. So I'm don't.
Yeah,
I can un-idiot.
Yeah, right. No, it's all good, man. But that's why we appreciate you coming on and being candid and sharing.
Make you guys
where
look smart. Right?
And and I feel smarter already. But no, man, if people want more information about you, obviously, they can check out Bacon Wrap Business, the show, the podcast. But where else should people go to get more information?
You know, you can always email me directly at askbrad@baconwrapbusiness.com. It's my personal email address. I answer every single one of them. So whether you have ideas, insights, or anything that, you know, kind of comes up, that's one of the best ways.
Yeah, man. All right. Well, very cool having you on, my friend Brad Costanzo. Good to see you here in our San Diego studio. And we will talk to you guys next time here on Reinvention Radio. Take care.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olsha, visit reinventionradio.com.